podcast fans to Tea in the Sahara, the home of fictional podcast reviews with me, your host, Kev. The format of my humble little show is a simple one. I sit down with another creative type from the scripted podcasting world for a Q&A chat about their podcast and their life within this amazing world of audio dramas. As in tradition with my interviews, I like to give the guest the chance to serve me a spicy question, putting me squarely in the hot seat, so brace yourselves for that juicy moment right at the end. This week, guys, we sit down with Jeff Schmidt, the creator, writer, director, and sound designer behind Ominous Thrill, a gritty fiction horror thriller that is also his debut. Hello, Jeff. How are you, mate?
I'm great, Kev. Great to be here.
Thank you so much for jumping on this call. I really appreciate it. It's early hours where you are.
All good. It's I'm fortunate to get to chat with you.
Before delving into Ominous Thrill, for the audience, could you provide some background on who actually is Jeff Schmidt?
primarily a sound designer for podcasts and doing indie film as well and video games. Started in broadcast radio back in the day because musicians have trouble making money. And I walked into a radio studio one day and there was all the blinky lights and stuff I knew from regular recording studios. And like, oh, wait, you can get paid to do this. And so I took a radio job and I wanted to be on air because that was kind of the performance, not a DJ, but like I wanted to do a talk show. And I did for a little bit do a radio talk show aimed at, this was in the early 90s. So it was aimed at Gen X, where all the other boomers were talking about, you know, Social Security and stuff and screaming about the government. I was doing talking about dating and, you know, younger people concerns. And I would send my demo tapes out to people and they'd be like, yeah, your show's okay, but who's doing all your production? Because I would do all the bumpers, you know, as you guys call them in the UK, the ins and outs, the promos, the little bits and shtick that I would do for the show, a little, you know, a little character dramas and things like that. And so that's got the most feedback, was people wanted me to do production. So I kind of followed that, and I followed that into a career that lasted, you know, 20 years or whatever. And then from podcasts went to video games, or from radio went to video games, did that for a bunch of years. And then when the podcast boom happened in 2015, some people and I that I knew were kind of frustrated in the broadcast radio world. There was not much creative freedom, and it seemed like podcasting was this great wide field of experimentation that you could do anything. And so since I already had a full-time job, or I'd, you know, a bunch of jobs at that point too, it was like, this is a free place to experiment and it's hot right now. Let's just play. And I ended up getting connected with Wondery in their very early days, a big podcast publisher here in the United States. I think they had maybe three employees at the time. And they hired me to start working on shows for them. And we hit it off right away with a big true crime show called Dirty John that just put them on the map. It got like, I don't know, 100 million downloads, something crazy. And so I worked with them on pretty much all of those kind of shows for them for like five or six years. And always wanted to get into fiction, but there wasn't a lot of opportunities to do it, at least do it for money. You could always do it on the indie side, but I was looking for full-time employment, right? So I kind of would do the opportunities that came up that had budget attached. But I wish in retrospect I'd taken the indie space a lot more seriously then, back in 2016. I've learned so much in just doing my own project now about the indie space that I really, really wish I didn't ignore it as long as I did, because it's a wonderful community. And I probably would have been brave enough to start this much sooner had I done that.
And for the gamers out there that may be listening to this particular podcast, what games were you involved with? I'm just curious myself, actually.
Yeah. So the biggest one was Diablo 3 for Blizzard. And I also worked on a couple of expansions of the World of Warcraft universe. I worked on Infamous 2 for Sony, PlayStation, and I worked a little bit on one of the Halo reboots Microsoft.
So you've got a pretty impressive CV.
Yeah. I mean, it's a couple years old now, but back then it was pretty contemporary. Yeah.
I prefer vintage, Jeff.
Yeah, there you go. I like your term. I'm going to steal that.
So for those who haven't listened to Ominous Thrill yet, what is its premise and how did the idea for your debut podcast come to life?
Yeah, so it's a full cast anthology. I call it dark fiction, but it's horror, thriller, suspense in that genre. It's character-based, so I always start primarily from a character point of view rather than I have some weird... I may start with a plot, but the way things have been shaking out in the construction of these, the writing of these, is that I always try to go back to, even if it's a plot idea, like who are the characters in this plot, right? And really make it about the characters. Because that's what people connect with, whether they like them or not.
Sure.
You know, it's about characters. So I would say to the elevator pitch, it's a dark fiction anthology, a full cast, fully acted, fully dramatized. It's kind of Black Mirror meets Silent Hill meets American Horror Story. There's at least one reference in there that you're familiar with, I'm sure.
Yeah, of course. No, no, Black Mirror for sure. I think you also referenced a Netflix show, and I always get this wrong. Is it Love, Death, and Robots? Is that right?
I did. Yeah, because that's an anthology. And what I like about that show is that, you know, they're short for one. I mean, even my episodes are running longer than theirs. But, you know, that's primarily an animation show. So it's about the animation. But the stories span genre. So one could be, you know, a thriller. The next could be sci-fi. The next is comedic, you know, sci-fi. They span genre, which I really like. I wouldn't say that Ominous Thrill is that broad. But stylistically, I like their attitude because they're a little edgier. They're not afraid to quote unquote go there, and that's kind of one of the ingredients that is important to me in my creative effort.
What prompted you to launch your own podcast at this particular moment, and what's driving this decision?
For me, it was purely artistic. You know, as we spoke briefly before the interview started, you know, I've done client work for the longest time. And when you're doing client work, you can be creative and you can be artistic, but the context is always constrained to the client's wants, needs, and wishes, right? Which is fair because they're paying. And so you respect that. But I would always keep bumping into this idea that, like, I had ideas, I had instincts, I had these things I wanted to do. And then it occurred to me, it's like, Jeff, what you're trying to do is your art. And you're trying to do your art in someone else's project, and that's always going to frustrate you. You can be artistic in someone else's project. You can be creative, but you're not. It's not a venue for your art. It's not a venue for Jeff Schmidt, right? I can get little ideas in here and there, and some of the projects I've worked on where I've had more autonomy, I've always thought my work was much better when I had the most autonomy, when I was the most constrained, most directed, and most limited. Were the places where I felt like that didn't really reach its potential to my ears. So it occurred to me, like, I need to do my own thing. I need to have that avenue to just freely pursue and explore my own artistic impulses, and to kind of elevate it, make it a little bit more serious than just a hobby. Like, actually, you know, part of the artistic cycle is like having an idea, creating, executing on that idea, and then putting it in front of people, like putting it out and then doing it again. Like, I needed to remind myself that is the process. I can't just make something and let it sit on my computer hard drive and be enough. You know, I need to put it out into the world. And if I'm going to bother doing that, to do it seriously enough where I think that there could potentially be an audience for it, and to put some effort into making sure that if there is an audience, that they find it. So it's about taking it, giving it more dignity and giving it the seriousness that I was easily not doing when I was burying myself in client projects. So that's why it just got to be time to do it. You know, I'd just been putting it off for way too long.
No, I can appreciate that. And before we jumped into this call, we briefly discussed how successful it's been so far, and how you, not shocked, you wasn't sort of expecting the response that you've received so far. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I was fortunate to have worked on some really big shows with like monster success attached. So I know, and these are not shows I created, right? Those are shows I got the privilege to work on. But I saw what that looks like. I saw what, you know, super success in the podcast space looks like. I had no expectation that what I was doing with this was going to be even close to that. And I still don't, right? I try to have realistic expectations. This is fiction, which is already one challenged in the United States, at least. It's genre fiction and it's anthology. So it's a niche within a niche within a niche, you know. So I my expectations were quite small. And given that, the fact that there's an audience there that has at least met and sometimes exceeded some of the other independent projects that I was paid to work on, totally shocks me and thrills me and kind of frightens me a little because it's like, oh, wait, people are finding this. Okay. I mean, it's not this big like thing, but it's done better than a few of the independent things so far. I mean, only 3 episodes in, so it could totally, you know, I don't know what the appropriate term is on your podcast, but I would say shit the bed. It could totally do that. That's my job now, is to make sure that it doesn't, or at least try my best to keep it from, you know, going off the rails. But yeah, I am surprised pleasantly.
For the listeners that haven't listened already, you really should do, because it is something quite unique, I think. In my perspective, within the fiction space, it is, it does push the envelope in its creativeness. And I really, really like that. What you've done there is pretty special.
Oh, that's so amazing to hear. Thank you.
I know that you have a rich sound design history within audio dramas. So how does it feel to have launched your very own show?
It feels great. The funny thing is, though, that, you know, when I first told, when I first started leaking this out to some people, the idea, and some of my sound people were immediately like, oh, I can't wait to hear this. And it was just like, okay, that's what sound people are going to be looking for. They're going to be looking for the sound, right? And to me, it's like, okay, the sound is important, clearly, as you can listen to and you can attest that I take it seriously, right? It's my job. It's what I do. But it was, for me, not about that. It was never designed to be kind of like a show reel of my sound design. That's not the function. This was really about like, can I get my hand around and kind of do well all the things that need to happen in audio storytelling before it even gets to post-production? I would write stuff figuring out like, I'll just figure out how to produce that later. You know, the stuff I try when I consult to writers to like, don't do it that way. I was doing it that way. I was like, because I trusted myself that I would be able to, even if I wrote myself into a corner, that I'd be able to figure it out sonically, right? And there was a couple of things that I was just like, man, why did I do this? I wrote myself way too much work. But it wasn't intentional to write myself complicated sound design, because one of the things I realized in my sound design career was that whatever feelings of being not fulfilled I was experiencing wasn't coming from like, I need more complicated sound design to do. That wasn't the itch that needed to get scratched. It was I need to learn how to write. I need to learn how to bring a story to completion. I need to learn how to cast for it and then direct those actors and work with them and then bring it all back and like bring it to life, and then how to put it out and get people to actually hear it. Like, those are all the things that were far more fascinating to me. And I just kind of left that good sound design was going to be table stakes. It's because I get to do that, because it was kind of the thing I had the most command over. I had the most reps on. It's something that is, I wouldn't say it's easy at all. It's not easy. It was very challenging to do these episodes, but it was the thing that was it wasn't the driver for doing it. It was all the other things that, and just being able to have my name on something saying I did that. And as opposed to, I worked on that. Dirty John had 100 million downloads. I can't say that's a Jeff Schmidt production. I worked on that show, but it's not my show, right? And so there is a distinction there. And so I wanted to experience that distinction a little more clearly with my own project.
How challenging was it to come up with a uniquely different storyline for every single episode of Ominous Frill? Because I must admit, that's got to be challenging, right?
Well, you know, so again, I was coming at this having always thought I had an instinct, and certainly working with writers on their projects to sound design them, I always felt like I had good story beat instincts, right? That I just needed to refine. So for me, it was more accessible of a project to do anthology where every story could be a short story. That was more accessible and doable, it felt, than saying, all right, I need to map out a 6 to 10 episode story with subplots and, you know, basically trying to map out a story that size. That felt, and still to some degree feels like, that's still a ways off. I still feel like I'm working up to that. I do expect to be able to do it, and I do expect to be doing it. That's the good news from this experience. And I'm glad I did this, because in the last year, you know, building all this stuff, I've gotten to experience conceiving an idea, executing the idea, bringing it to life and putting it out 7 times, as opposed to if I just stuck with one story, I might still be in post-production on that one story. It might not even be public yet. right? So I've run through the mill 7 times now. I've gotten 7 times the experience. And now I can reasonably grow into doing an episode, a story that takes 2 episodes, and then maybe one that does 4, right? So I see that as part of the process. And so for me, anthology was far more accessible. And coming up with ideas is easy. Kind of like you can, like coming up with, like I do it as a practice now. It's like I come up with ideas every single day. I pour them, put them in a file, even if they're junk. You know, it's just like getting that idea muscle. And then when I need to start writing an episode, I'll go back through and say like, oh, that one feels good. I'll flesh that one out. Every one of these stories started with just a really simple idea. And then the hard part is actually like now figuring it out. Like, how do you actually tell this story? What is the story? It's not just a log line or a kooky plot idea, or maybe it's a kooky character or something, but it can start anywhere. So for me, it was just more accessible to start that way.
With that in mind then, did you have a few stories already sort of fleshed out, sort of drafted before Ominous Thrill came to life?
Yeah. So, I mean, I already knew like mid to late 2022 that this was something I wanted to start taking seriously, like in terms of actually doing it. I'd wanted to do it, but that's when it was just like, no, I need to carve space out for this and actually do it. Because there's no more, you know, it would be the one thing that I would regret the most had I not done. So I had worked with Mark Ramsey, another podcast producer who has developed a bunch of stuff, and I worked on a lot of things with him. And then in 2019, he wanted to do a similar kind of show, a horror anthology thing. And he asked if I wanted to write, because I had mentioned to him that I was interested in eventually creating my own stuff. And so I came up with, I think, 6 concepts for that. Just one afternoon, I sat down and just blurted 6 concepts out and then kind of like put them in basic logline format. And they were, you know, mostly okay. But 2 of them ended up being episodes of Ominous Thrill. 2 of them that are out now, Sleep Tight and The Ride. Both of those started with just a 1-line plot idea, you know. And they were all plot. They didn't have any characters attached. And that was the hard part, figuring out like, how do I turn these plot things into stories that with characters. So that's where it started. And then once I realized like, oh, that was not hard coming up with ideas. I know how to do that. The hard part is figuring out how to make them stories, right? Like coming up with a log line is not hard. So that was the learning process there. So yeah, there was a few of the older ideas and that just taught me right there. It's like, oh, it doesn't matter if I thought of an idea 3 years ago, 8 years ago, as a 12-year-old, I could still revisit that with new ears, new eyes, new aesthetics, new influences, and bring it into the world. So my mind is super open about that stuff.
So Jeff, was it your original intention to deliver unfiltered and daring adult themed content without holding back, which I personally admire myself? I think I mentioned before, you really pushed the envelope with Ominous Thrill within some of the storylines. So was that always your intention to sort of just be unfiltered?
Yeah, the short answer is absolutely. That was the one thing that I find myself, even, you know, my wife too, we find ourselves watching a lot of this kind of prestige television and film that are edgy in adult themes and adult content. And it could be, you know, language certainly, but, you know, adult themes of substance use, violence, sex, and the depictions of that, and certainly non-traditional kind of transgressive things. So those were always the things that I always felt like, why aren't there audio stories that do the same thing that television gives us? You know, the kind of these darker theme. And I looked at kind of some of the directors, like film directors and television directors who I admire the most. And, you know, people like David Fincher, who are doing, you know, darker themed, like that kind of stuff always drew me more than, say, Spielberg, you know. So it felt to me like the podcast universe was mostly doing the kind of hero's story, the redemption story, the happy ending, you know, thing. And it's like, it's not that I'm opposed to that. In fact, I have one coming out next week that has, that kind of follows a more traditional beat like that. So I'm going to explore that part of it too. But yeah, for me, those things were things I wasn't hearing. And I'm not so arrogant to say that no one else is doing it. Because there's like 4 million podcasts and I haven't listened to all of them. So I'm almost certain that there are other shows that are doing even edgier stuff than what I've done. And I actually don't even consider myself that edgy yet. Like, I feel like I still, every episode, I'm just like, did I go there far enough? I'm still questioning. So I'm kind of curious. I'm going to bounce a question back to you when you're like, and this all comes from what our perspective is, but like, why did you perceive the things that you heard anyway so far as being edgy at all? Or you know, maybe it's not even the right word for you, but.
No, edgy works. No, I get that. I think the two episodes I listened to, one of them, which was the one about sleep deprivation.
Mm-hmm. Right, sleep tight.
That one, just, it was quite trippy anyway, I found. But I have to say, and this is, you know, my personal opinion, but within audio dramas, it's sex scenes or scenes of that nature, right, are usually sort of dialed right down. You know that something is happening. You can hear it, right?
Yeah.
You know that something is happening. But this is the first time I've actually, within that episode, where there was a sex scene that sounded very real to my ears anyway. I don't know if that was intentional, but.
Oh, absolutely. No, no. If you're going to do it, I say do it. If you're going to do it, honor it and do
right.
it. That's my attitude on that. And there's a couple others coming up too that go there. That and even like that, I need to feel like it's real. And like, you know, there's a whole conversation about this, but to me, I always try to base it on, is this properly motivated within the story, or is it, you know, and that's what people first ask, like, well, is it titillating? Well, yeah, it's titillating, but is it a story beat? And for that particular instance in Sleep Tight, it was very much about displaying this character who is now rejuvenated through getting this amazing sleep and all the things that she wants to do, including experience this kind of like hookup thing that she was normally doing and sleepwalking through. And now she's getting to experience it. She wanted to experience that fully awake, fully alive, fully there. That was part of her character development. And so for me, it felt natural. And to honor that, I wanted it to feel real. My biggest fear when I started doing these was I wasn't going to get actors willing to go along, but I'm so overjoyed. I'm getting really brave, fearless performers for whom they'd often said, like, look, if you can't do this stuff, I don't know why you're acting. You know, that like, it's like, oh, nay, like, you know, but I always leave it up to the actor. And like, I make sure it's in the audition. I make sure it's there so they know that these scenes appear, that it'll be part of the project. I don't try to hide it, or that's the last thing I want is to get into studio and have people go like, wait a minute, I was not signing on for this. I'd much rather have them bail out before we even start than after we get started. But yeah, that's important to me to do those things and to honor them and make them as real, or at least functionally as real as possible.
Yeah. And you do that. You certainly do that.
Thank you.
If Ominous Thrill continues to thrive, what are your plans for the next project or assignment? I know we're already a few episodes in, but is there potentially a second series of Ominous Thrill?
Oh, so yeah. So I think, and this is unclear how I communicate this, because I, you know, part of the parameters of podcast is that the things that work are regular, consistent, always, or what they call in the business, always on. So there's, and that in the business is like, it's moved to daily now. There are some shows that do daily releases, right? Or maybe twice a week. But like the kind of primary median is, I think, weekly. This show is way too involved, as you've heard, to do weekly by myself. Even every 2 weeks would not be a pace that I could sustain. And so I decided, let's try monthly. You know, I had 7 episodes done in the can that gave me some runway to start writing and producing new episodes. So the plan is probably to get through the year, being till about October of this year with stuff, probably take a break monthly. So that'll, I think, be 8, 9, or 10, somewhere around there. I don't know. Take a break around the holiday. And then basically just see if I can keep the monthly train going through 2025 and doing it that way. So that is the primary objective now, is keeping Ominous Thrill on the tracks and continuing to develop it. And that includes, by the way, if anybody's listening to this, there's certainly writers, taking on other people's stories that might fit within, you know, the kind of aesthetic genre that Ominous Thrill is representing. Because I can't possibly write everything, and I'm okay. I would love to like read a story and go like, oh, this would make a great episode of Ominous Thrill. Let me make it. Right. And I'm open to doing, like, none of this stuff is all of the stuff so far that I'm doing and this is again because I wanted to challenge myself, none of it has first-person narration. I'm not doing the first-person storytelling thing. I completely appreciate how efficient that method of storytelling is, like how much easier it is to write a first-person story, get a single narrator on the mic, and then sound design that. That's 90% of what I used to do for Wondery anyway. And so I'm not opposed to that. I just probably won't write much stuff like that myself, because it's not a form that I feel naturally drawn to creatively. But if other writers were interested in contributing shorts, you know, basically a 30 to 50 minute episode of that kind of thing, I would totally entertain it if it fit aesthetically into what Ominous Thrills, I think, shaping up to be. So that would be the primary thing. And of course, I'm always open to doing client projects and working on other people's fiction. And it doesn't have to be genre, but genre is kind of my jam.
So with Ominous Thrill, then you'd be open to collaborative writing, creative writing with other writers?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, totally. Like I said, there's the foundation of it is going to be kind of the aesthetic that I set out, but I can't possibly do everything to keep, you know, I'm realistic about the expectations about how it's going to perform in the market. And I'm also realistic about creatively, like, can I write 12 original stories a year all by myself and produce them? Can I do everything 12 times a year? And I'm going to need, and I even told somebody, it's like, you know, I would even consider sound design help at some point. You know, I want to be able to pay people. That's the thing. Right now, I wouldn't necessarily be able to do that. The only people I could pay on this project so far is the actors. And I absolutely wanted to make sure I could pay actors.
So, Jeff, I initially encountered your work through the incredible sound design that you created and crafted for Aftershock. Slightly ambitious comparison, but would you consider Aftershock to be your Sergeant Pepper of your career?
I hope not. I don't say that disparagingly at all, but that just means, I mean, that, look, just for context, I made that episode, the pilot for Aftershock, in March of 2019. That was before Q Code was even a thing in the United States. Q Code was not even a company at that point. Well, they were a company, but they weren't public. They hadn't released Blackout yet. And the pilot that I created, I would say, with the exception of we recast one character in that, it was 90% of what that first episode is with the earthquake in it. So almost like the pilot went, that was like one of the few times where, that was an early win and early success that I felt super jazzed by. Just, it really pumped me up. But it's been 5 years now, and I hope, while I'm proud of it and I thought it was amazing and I loved doing it, I feel like as a creative person, as a professional, that I've done more, maybe that wasn't as successfully in the marketplace or whatever, but I've learned a lot and I'm capable of doing stuff at that scale, but I'm also capable of doing smaller, more intimate things. And so to say that it's a Sergeant Pepper, I would like one of my own projects to be my Sergeant Pepper. I guess that's I'm thrilled that it worked, that project connected me with a lot of other work, which was great. But in the end, I'm aiming that someday, if it is my Sergeant Pepper, that maybe I'll end up making, you know, a better one through one of my own projects. That's kind of my ambition. That makes sense.
Yeah. I had to get a musical reference in there somewhere.
No, of course. Well, the funny thing is about Aftershock season one, it was after we finished it, the team, Sarah Wayne Callies and the producers, they kind of called me the fifth Beatle on that show.
Funny enough, that was a comment and a reference that I made within one of my reviews for Aftershock, I believe.
Oh, did you? Maybe you originated that and they picked it up then, because Sarah did start calling me the fifth Beatle. Yeah. So, well, thank you, Kev. I appreciate that.
Invoice on the email. Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, of course.
So Jeff, time to pass on the knowledge baton. What advice would you give to individuals who want to enter the fields of sound design or podcasting?
Oh boy. That's very wide reaching. I would always say to someone to make sure, in either case, sound design for any media or podcasting specifically, is to be at least as interested and curious about story as you are about sound design techniques, the latest tools and technology and tricks and all that stuff. Because at the end of the day, all of those things, and they're important, are in service to a story. In film, they say you're in service to the picture. I would say, no, you're in service to the story. In podcasting, you're in service to the dialogue or the writing. No, you're in service to a story. And so that ultimately is, at the end of the day, what those crafts are there to do, is to support story. And then the different media approaches or outlets for those stories dictate kind of the approach you would take with the sound. But going back before a step of that, I would just say, why? Why do you want to do this? Did you want to do it because you're getting feedback on some stuff and maybe the market is telling you that you're good at it? Because that's the path I followed. And I would just say on that front, if that's true, just periodically check in with yourself to make sure that the thing that people want you to do, the thing that you're supposedly good at, according to other people, is something that you actually want to do. Because the external feedback and the external validation is great. It's like, but I like liken it to, you know, the very crude, very crude analogy to crack cocaine. It's like, it gives you that amazing boost, but then there's a hard crash when it's not there next, right? And so when you live on that external validation, because that's the primary reason you're doing it, you're going to get disappointed. You're going to be frustrated. You're going to find that it's not fun. And so to make sure whatever you're doing, even if it's not the thing that you're getting the most attention for, is the thing you enjoy spending the most time doing. Sitting in this chair, doing this work, you know, it's 12 hours you're sitting in this chair working on someone's project. You have to really like sitting in this chair and doing this stuff on the screen. That's important. Being good at it is kind of, it's important, and wanting to get better at it, but why do you want to get better at it? Is it because you're trying to get feedback? You're trying to get validated? You're trying to have other people like you, or, you know, whatever? Or is it because you actually enjoy sitting in the chair? So just check in with yourself, because you're gonna change over the course of your career and be open to the idea that, you know, like for me with Ominous Thrill, it was important that I be in this chair, but I also needed to be back over there on that couch, because on that couch is where I write. You know, here's where I make the thing come to life, but over there is where the ideas come from. So I needed to connect with that too. So that's just a lesson that I've learned. And that's what I would tell someone who wanted to call me and say, how do you mix this? I'd be like, well, why do you want to mix it that way? I'd be like a small child to just constantly ask them why.
Be inquisitive, right? Is that the answer at the end of the day?
Yeah. 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 And just check yourself and be willing to change course. Have the courage to change course, because it's hard.
And imagine also, don't be afraid to, you know, to go at yourself, go at it alone, and push the boundaries, right?
Well, you almost have to now. I mean, in everything you do, people want the days of you walking into a big company and having them hand you a pile of money to make your thing, unless you're a celebrity, right? It's hard. So the best way to do that, if that's your goal, is to build an audience, to have a body of work, to say, I can do this, and I've done stuff that works and is warranted. The money you're giving me is warranted, because nobody's in the market to buy other people's ideas and then have to promote them too.
All sage advice, Jeff. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay, Jeff, your turn. Hit me with your question.
So I could ask you a million questions, so I might just funnel out some stuff. But here in the States anyway, we don't really have a robust, it's improving. We don't have a robust audio fiction world. And for better or for worse, in Europe, in the UK specifically with the BBC, they've never stopped making audio drama. They, like, it vanished from America, you know, the minute television came on the scene. It kind of just, went off to the dustbin. And now it's coming back with podcasting, but it never left in the BBC. So there was always, I felt, and I know there's a lot of complaints about the style of the BBC material and things like that, but it's never left as a concept, audio drama, and maybe there's stigma attached to it. And it seems to me like it doesn't surprise me now that someone like you, but would pick up the mantle of being an advocate for audio fiction, of trying to do reviews, like trying to bring that same kind of critical approach to audio fiction that you see readily available in television and film and other media, music criticism. All these other art forms kind of have a proper critical response network, and it seems like audio fiction doesn't. So is your interest in it drawn to that, to kind of like take up that mantle of doing that for audio fiction? Did it come from the fact that audio fiction for you is just part of your media diet anyway? Or was it Was there something else that kind of prompted you to start doing that? Because my hope is that people see what you're doing and say, you know what, Kev's right. There really does need to be that critical network or ecosystem for audio fiction to give it the dignity and the respect it deserves.
Yeah. So if I've got it right, you're asking me...
Yes, that was a very long question. I apologize.
So you're asking me my take on audio fiction as it stands, as it is at the moment.
No, I'm sorry. Let me rephrase. What got you into wanting to review and be part? What got you wanting to do that?
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. that's okay. That's all right. I fell into it, if honest, and I started actually. So I started out writing reviews for music, and this happened in lockdown. Like a lot of people's hobbies, these ideas, it all started happening for me in lockdown. I started to write reviews about music. I soon found that it wasn't really being heard, and by the time I'd reviewed a song or an album, record companies had already given it to these professional people to review, and it'd be done. And by the time I'd done it, it's old hat. It's a week, 2 weeks later, the ship has sailed. So I did a few reviews for podcasts, for audio dramas. Nothing really happened. And then I did one for The Cypher for the BBC. And I always reference this because this is where it started for me.
That was John Scott Dryden's show, right?
Yes, correct. Yes.
That was a good show. I like that one.
And Brett Nitchin is also a writer on the show. It was a fantastic show, and it really hooked and engaged with me. And I wrote a review. I think I put it out just on New Year's Eve randomly.
Yeah.
The uptake and interest in that particular review, that spurred me on to switch from writing about music to just purely writing about podcasts. I tried other genres to write about, but I couldn't. For some reason, audio fiction really sort of resonated with me. And I found that easier to write about. God knows why. Maybe it's because it's fictitious that it made it easier for me to write. But yeah, and since then I've not looked back. And, I've been blessed with writing reviews for some really, really fantastic creative writers, and they share their work with me.
No, I think that's great. I mean, like I said, I'm so grateful that it's, you find it interesting and that you're reviewing good shows and you're finding and unearthing good shows and good creators and getting a chance to just, put a critical ear on things. Cause I think that's the thing that's kind of missing from fiction a bit. Not that the average person's going to listen to that, but I think it elevates the dignity of the medium, and it deserves it because there's so much good stuff. There really is. It's just, I can't imagine how you could even keep up with it all. But I guess you have to pick your battles, right? Like, you can only review so much stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm very honest with people who write into me to say, can you review my show? Not everything I get sent, I review purely just because I have to like it. I'm not going to write I'm not going to lambast somebody, and I'm not going to, pour scorn on somebody's project because I don't enjoy it. But I will, I won't write. I only write what I enjoy. And I hope that comes across to the reader in that sense as well, because what I try to give the reader and then hopefully the listener is, a balanced opinion and account about a podcast that I really feel you should listen to and you should jump into if you enjoy escapism as much as I do.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think in the States, there's definitely more of a critic's take on cross media. Film, television, music, they take on an air of there's a pretension about it it's about kind of like they want to show you how much they know in their critique as much as it is they want to talk about the project. So you don't seem to be doing that, right? You don't yet anyway. You might get high on your haunches at some point, but you keep going like the way you are, but you never know what success can do to you, right?
I'm quite level-headed and quite grounded, I have to say.
Good. That's great news. Yeah. Because I think that's what the space needs, right? And I appreciate that too. Rather than just pissing on stuff, you just pick things you like and talk about those. That's perfect.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate your kind words. And that about wraps up this week's Q&A with Jeff. Cheers, Jeff, for taking time out of your busy week to have a chat with me.
Thank you, Kev. It was an honor to be here and chat with you.
You can find Ominous Thrill on your podcast platform of choice. with its release schedule being on a monthly basis. If you're a writer or podcast creator keen to be interviewed on my show or have your audio drama reviewed, get in touch. All of my podcast episodes and written reviews can be found via my website, teainthesahara.com, where you can also conveniently find all of my contact details. And until next time, this has been Kevin Wan for Tea in the Sahara. Cheers.